minutes or copy them one way or another, do I have a motion?
So moved.
Move by Supervisor Orbe.
Sorry.
Second by Supervisor Brady to approve the minutes of our August meeting. Any comments, discussions? If not, all those in favor, youth and governance?
Aye.
The committee?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Committee members, supervisors, youth and governance, any comments at this time? I'm not sure if anybody made it out to the Oktoberfest. The sky is cleared after the morning rain there, and there was still quite a few people in attendance. It's just another one of the things that the county parks sponsors. And if you get a chance, Oktoberfest is always a big event. Coming up, I believe, this weekend is the Pringle Nature Center's Fall Festival, and I was out there last year. If you get a chance, go out there. They have falconers out there. They have music. You can do the trails. And for those of you that haven't spent any time at Pringle, it's a very nice weekend to go, and I think the weather looks like a little iffy on Saturday. We were just talking. Those of us that rely on the weather, you never know, but it cleared up for the Oktoberfest. The projects you'll hear about tonight that are ongoing, we had a lull for about 20 days here, and now we're knee-deep in projects again, as our staff will tell you, between Brookside and the paving has just been at a frantic pace this summer, and the new projects that Gary's had come in from the municipalities. And a big project that a lot of people don't see, but will, because I want to get everybody out there possibly for a meeting and a walkthrough this fall, is the KD project. That is with new parking, paving. We're not going for the metropolitan look out there. This is still staying in the theme of that park as a true nature center. And the work is looking beautiful out there. So when hopefully it's going to be done here. Looks to me like they're ahead of schedule, but end of October, sometime around there. Another thing I'd like to mention to the committee is the work at Brookside is going so well that I think possibly here this fall, when the weather is still nice, we might want to schedule not a meeting out there, but a daytime walkthrough for the committee to see what's going on. And Ray can set that up, and we can have it at a time where there's not a lot of construction going on. We could even do it on a weekend, you know, where we don't have to wear hard hats and steel-toed shoes. So there's a whole lot, and I know you've all been hearing in these reports. It's a very busy time. When you put facilities in with highways and parks and the golf, that's more than half of what's going on in the county, so you're going to hear a lot this evening. So that's what I have, any committee members. So we'll move on to citizens' comments. Any citizens that would like to address the committee would have 5 minutes to speak on anything that pertains to what this committee oversees, and we only ask that you give your name and address to speak on anything, anybody that would wish to speak.
Shirley Davidson, 8252 Adams Avenue, Bristol. There's something that was first brought to my attention back when John Collins was county executive. He came to me and suggested that the county would like to move the Bristol Town Hall off of county parkland, and they would help us financially if we could get permission to do it. At that time, I couldn't gather enough support from my county board, my town board, and so the project fell through. We now have formed a Bristol Historical Society. I'm one of four members here tonight, and we're asking that you see about putting a line item in the budget so that we can get that original town hall built in 1869 and used until just recently up into the British, the Bristol government complex, I might call it, where all three of the historic Bristol town halls are now located. So that's what I'm here for. We have, some of our other members have a, probably have a budget put together, but I'm pleading for funds so that we can get that done, and I'm hoping the county will help us.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? Yes?
I'm Barbara McCabe, 9115 160th Avenue, Bristol, and as well, I'm here to support the Bristol Historical Society movement that building.
Anyone else here?
Kay Sharp, 20208 83rd Street in Bristol. I'm here also to support soliciting funds to move the old town hall. Our organization, nonprofit, we're a member of the Wisconsin Historical Society. We are incorporated. We have enthusiastic members willing to take on the project to restore its historical glory. We have obtained land in Bristol to move it to, but we need the funds to move the historic building. It kind of comes down to a race with the clock to preserve the building. It's structurally, it would be needing maintenance, and we need to move it when it's in movable condition. We also hope to make it handicap accessible and a learning center for young people to learn the historic elements of the rural land of people of Kenosha County. And we've already involved Bristol 8th grade class last year. We asked for them to submit a slogan for our organization, which turned out being bringing the past to the present. And we had involvement of the whole 8th grade class. They were very supportive, and it was a nice youthful movement to see. So I thank you for your consideration.
Anyone else wish to speak on our citizens' comments? If not, citizens' comments are closed. On our agenda this evening, Ray and I put a discussion to Bristol Town Hall. Possibly while you folks are here, we'll do that. We'll do that first. If there's no problems with the committee, it was the last item here, possible discussion. We've also done some work, and Matt has dug up some of the history here, and the county approved this a few years back. And I know that there was a committee formed, and I believe the town of Bristol at the time approved it also, with no funds.
Yeah, that was it.
We have that paperwork. Now, you folks formed a committee, so my question, is there any funds that you've raised?
We have some funds in our treasury. We have starting a beginning pledge drive. We've got $5,000 pledged. Our current treasury is that?
Our current balance is $4,500. We've got two fundraisers betting, I think, $1,000 on the first and $1,500 on the second. So it's $2,500. But to reach the goal of what it costs to move the building, it's going to take a lot of fundraisers.
We need
a lot of time.
About $75,000.
Right. Yeah, we did that original paper. It's about $75,000 to move it. So I don't think it's something that can happen within a year. But we need to find a way to help with fundraising, or you need to find citizen support in Bristol if they've only been able to raise $4,500. This has been a few years.
Well, it died when I'm part of the project. Somebody must have been at the end of the drinking season, came by and said, "We can solve Bristol's problem with two matches and $5 gallons of gas." And that's when the whole thing dropped, because it's remote. And it would be gone before the alarm even went through, because it's a wood building.
We did a fundraiser in November to raise the funds to apply for the 501c3, which we have now obtained. So we really couldn't start asking for funds until we had that, and we didn't get that till the spring. So any of the funds that have been generated have come in since then.
Right.
But the fundraising actually just started in the spring of this year.
And the other issue is the Bristol, Wisconsin Historical Society has only been established in less than a year. And this October, I think, will be our 1-year anniversary. So, although you're relating back to the past, this isn't new organization that's willing to.
But that maybe you folks are from that area. Pringle took us over 20 years to get set up.
Yeah.
You know, that nature center, which was donated by the Pringle family, and those funds were in county hands for, I believe, almost 20 years before we did the whole thing. But Matt Collins has done some research. We do have the original proposals as far as the moving. And Matt, you also have, there's been some question as to what we spend on the building a year, and also the shape of it. And we have toured, and it's in very good shape, so you don't have to worry about that. But Matt, if you could give us some information on this.
Well, based on my research, because this was basically done with the previous director, John Rudy, to work internally and externally with the partners, John McCabe, through your group. Is he still a member of your?
He's the president.
Okay. And I had a chance to meet him and talk about those fundraising efforts. But as far as the building itself, over the last 20 years, we did our due diligence to make sure that it doesn't topple over as far as the structure goes. We did re-roof it, I think in the 1980s or so, and we also painted it at that time. Any maintenance issues around the building, we have taken care of as far as your weekly mowing, string trimming around the building. We had to do some door maintenance and repairs on it. So any of the structural integrity of that building since the records show in the 1980s has been performed on that building to our knowledge.
And did we get an estimate when John was here? And I can't remember if it was from John McCabe or John got it, but I thought the estimate was $75,000 to $100,000. And it had mainly the cost drivers were the power lines that would have to be altered in order to move it. And I thought that, because I wasn't here, I think, maybe when that estimate was put together, but I thought that, yeah, the original site was by the Westosha Senior Center there.
Right.
And I couldn't remember if that estimate came in and it was to move it there, or it was to move it then to the current site that you folks have in the town, in the village.
I guess the Senior Center were a little bit leery of accepting more evaluation on their property. They felt it might hinder some of the federal and state grants they're getting for their activities. And so they backed off because they thought, well, if we brought that on there, it would raise the value of their property. Here's an additional thing in doing things there. And they were afraid that it would jeopardize their funding.
So then is that estimate though for the 75 to 100,000, if that's still what it is that to move it then to the site that you folks have in the downtown Bristol, so to speak?
Correct. So okay. Which includes a huge dollar amount of expense related to those power lines, as well as building a foundation that includes a basement at the new location and sidewalks, ramps. But just moving down the road, you know, when you count how many wires there are across, there's like a huge number compared to going to Westosha. But the price ranges we've been working with so far are still right between like 75 to 85.
So you feel comfortable, my main question is that you guys feel comfortable that is a dollar amount that'll get you where you need to go?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, we've got the official estimates.
Okay, good. Because I think when John was here and he was working with John, I think it was kind of a little bit more than this, but not a lot more. So if you've got something that's a little more scientific, that would be good. So you've got a real target to shoot at now.
Unless Tony has a huge helicopter and they could just pick it up and move it over and drop it.
Well, Supervisor Gilmore asked me that already today. Not a helicopter, but she was asking
what. Thank Sheriff Beth for that.
Yeah. Don't even mention a helicopter to Sheriff Beth.
What we would normally do in a situation like this, in my experience, is, you know, be part of something. In the old days, when in Kenosha, the fireworks, the county would give a certain amount to the fireworks.
I think it would be very hard-pressed to press the county to do all of the funding for something like that for a community. The ability for the county to apply and your ability to get grants is, we've had great success. So using our staff to come up with ideas is one big thing. And then I guess, since you've approached this committee doing some hard thinking on how we can help raise funds, the priority, you know, I mentioned the Pringle Center, the priority naturally of the county board is to fund everything countywide that needs to be accomplished for the year. And it would be abnormal to fund something fully like this in 1 year to help, to assist in fundraising, to come up with some ways. So I'm going to give it out to the committee here for any brainstorming here and any thoughts.
Well, I have a question.
No.
Go ahead. Do you have any plans for fundraising right now?
We do. We have a couple of things in the works right now.
Okay.
We have a fish boil on October 17th, if anyone would like to buy tickets. As well as we have a history day in conjunction with the Western County Historical Society.
Miller Park in Trevor.
On October 2nd. And then we have a painting party tentatively scheduled for November, if anybody likes to paint.
We're hoping that will be, could bring in maybe 20,000,
25,000. Oh, no, $3,000.
$25,000.
Yeah.
I love fish. Where's the fish well?
By the fire pit on 83.
Okay.
And tickets are $20 a person. See me if you'd like to purchase tickets.
Okay.
The reason I ask is because I was part of the Dream Playground project, you know, initial take off the ground thing, and there was a lot of fundraising for that, as well as some give from the government. So I think that's what Supervisor Elverman's talking about to some degree. So I was just curious what types of plans you already have on the schedule as far as fundraising.
That's what we have on the agenda right now, and then we were possibly doing what the Kenosha Historical Society does downtown. They have a chili cook-off, and it's usually in the wintertime, so we had talked about possibly doing that in February, having a West of the Eye chili cook-off, which is their biggest fundraiser that they have all year long.
Thank you.
Supervisor Grady. Just a couple of observations and some comments. I think you're on the right track. If you have a budget that you know you need to accomplish, that's the first thing. Second thing is you have your 501c3, which is truly essential. It's kind of in the city, so it's a good thing. My thoughts would just be, if you had a plan, say over 3 or 4 years, we need to raise this much to get the project to go. You can, of course, piggyback with the county here for their application of grants and so forth. I don't know if the county exec has in this budget, if you've approached him or not. Maybe there's a small amount of money there, some amount of dollars if you're making progress. But I think it's going to take maybe some little bit of time and planning, but I think you've got the elements you need to move forward. That's one.
And I forgot to mention, we just got a raffle license today, one of the two Wisconsin State raffle licenses, so that should help.
Well, I would start with a gun raffle, assault rifle.
The
political party's doing
it. We just got it yesterday or today in the email, so I was planning on going to Best Buy and all the retailers tomorrow.
We do. My sportsman's club does a 40 gun raffle in the fall. That's why, but it raises a lot of money.
It's amazing.
We didn't do any assault rifle.
I was going to wait if the committee had any other, but I wanted to make a comment.
Yes, Ray.
So one of the things too, it sounds like from a revenue generating standpoint, you guys have a basic game plan, as Supervisor Grady said, and it's more community geared, which is good in terms of developing kind of that grassroots support for it. But one of the things that I'd say you really need to focus on, it because just about every time these things work, Dream Playground included, there's a huge corporate side to things, and unless you get those folks to the table, that's really where, and in Bristol, at least, you guys are fortunate, you've got an industrial park, and there's a pretty good commercial base by the interstate as well. So hopefully, if you can do some strategizing in that regard, which Matt could probably help with as well, I'm volunteering him, that's really, I think, where you're going to be able to, because I don't know, Supervisor Wamble, how much money was funded by corporate donations or business donations?
I don't have the exact number, but it was quite substantial.
Yeah.
We actually have a committee in our group to attack corporate fundraising.
Okay.
So
very
members,
good.
Yeah. So we've got a group that are going to be concentrating on that.
Because you folks actually have the car dealers along the interstate, right? Mm-hmm. And then you come back along 50 for a portion. Because it's huge. Because if I was in the town of Salem, I would right now contact the Vail Corporation because they're putting $13 million into Wilmot right now. That's the type of thing that you need to look at. You're just short of the U-lines, but they're worth talking to.
We're talking to them.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the type of contributions that they've given to Kenosha County, politically they give large ones also. But this is not a huge thing. I mean, they're very close to you, and they're very worth talking to. So,
we've had initial conversations with the new supervisor too.
Yeah.
So yeah, Uline is on our list. So, as well as the other corporations.
Because that green playground, that was $1 million. You know, this is very doable. Just on, and I know you're going to need help, but we're trying to come up with some ideas here. Yeah, and
I would be happy to help organize a golf outing too if you guys want to do something for next year. I mean, we can definitely have something at Brightondale, and it's just a matter of getting the players. But we can raise some funds that way.
And that could be a good fundraiser.
Can I ask your name?
Dan Dreyer.
Thank you.
Is there any grants from Green Energies, or if that's out there, I don't even know, you know, to help move the wires, because that's the biggest cost of moving the property.
I don't know if there's anything directly from the utilities, but there's so many grants and type of assistance available that it wouldn't surprise me that there's something out there. It's just a matter of searching. It's just amazing the amount of money that is available in different from different sources.
I would hammer it with, you know, Wisconsin Historical Society. I would really work with them to see if they can find it.
And John has been making calls, and we do have a couple members on the committee to investigate in that area. One downfall we've seen to that is many of the grants you can't apply for unless the building stays on where the original location. And so some of those we've had to like knock off right off the bat, unfortunately. But we're continuing for that area too.
Good. And Supervisor Elvin.
Yeah. If you guys wanted to do anything on site as well, if you wanted to utilize the Pringle Nature Center, if they don't have any events going on currently in the books, if you wanted to do even walks to the historic facility to gain more people and to have access to visually see it, to get excited about it, we can work and collaborate between the county and the Pringle Nature Center, your group, to do some fundraising efforts on site as well.
And that's great, Matt, because we just presented, we had a booth at the Kenosha County Fair, and many people walked up to us and said, oh, we go by there all the time. We'd love to go inside and see it because there is a walking path near it right now.
We could probably open the door. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that might be tripped over, so we can at least see it inside. Absolutely.
Consider something like that. That'd be
sure.
Great.
Absolutely.
I just appreciate you guys taking the time to put this on the agenda and bring it up for discussion, because this building is in the 18th district, and I have had several constituents approach me and ask about what's happening with that building, why hasn't it been moved. I don't know the entire history. I know, like Shirley said, with when John Collins was the county executive, there was some sort of push to get rid of the building, or I don't know all those details, but I do know that education and preserving history is costly, or it's expensive. We're going to fork out money, whether it be through grants or fundraising or a big donor in Bristol or the county helping out. But the lack of doing so is costly. You know, the next generation needs to be able to see the foundation and the heritage that they have in their community. And so I appreciate this as an open discussion, and whatever help or tips or advice you can offer to the Historical Society would be wonderful. I do have some flyers that they brought. If you guys want to take one, it has their information on it.
Any other discussion?
I asked, did you get the numbers back in regards to the liability insurance?
Yeah, I didn't get the insurance number. Barnett didn't have, he was tied up in a meeting this afternoon and he wasn't able to get it.
Okay. He'll let me know and I'll get it to you.
Yeah, that's great. My concern was, is it a bigger expense to the county? And I had talked to Chairman here about the cost that we're accruing over the years. And I talked to Mr. Arvin today about the fact that it's costing the county about $1,000 a year or so to maintain the grounds. And sometimes if there's something else that comes up with a tree falling on the building or whatever, we have to do those types of repairs. And so I know the expense to the county at this point isn't great, but you know, the building is obviously a historical building. And at some point, it may be some substantial amount of work. And so we just want to do what's best for the taxpayers and the citizens in the 18th district.
Thank you. Well, there's no further discussion on this. I want to brush this aside, that this is a nice starting point, and we talk to you folks in 5 months. But our expertise here is definitely open to you. These people are all very busy, but you know, we can look at some possibilities. We also know a lot of people, and everyone in this room knows a lot of people, and you know, come up with some thoughts as far as fundraising also to certain people, maybe some key people. You know, they really jump this up. If you're looking at $75,000, we could jump it up in a year to we've got 35 to work with, would be a big thing. And I guess it would be up to then a county supervisor or county supervisors if they want to try to find a way in the budget or talk to the county executive. But I know the county can't fund $75,000 this year on one item, but you know, possibly there's $5,000. We used to do $10,000 for the fireworks in Kenosha, you know, that type of thing. So there's possibilities to jumpstart this. So I guess I would say at this point, you know, the committee can look into that. An individual supervisor can look into it, you know, the budget. I think maybe in a 4-year period or something, you could accomplish it. My personal opinion, don't be afraid to take us up on some of these offers, because like Dan at the golf course, say you get 50 golfers for an outing, it's your first outing that you do, you can raise quite a bit of money that day, and it can be a popular thing. And the Pringle Center is another very popular place. I would suggest, is it this weekend out there? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That possibly somebody takes the time to be out there.
John and I will be volunteering there.
Okay.
We were planning to hand out our history day on October 2nd flyer. Because that's a free family event people right. can attend, just to get some visibility. And that is a nice event.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's a certain group of people. When you're talking about something like this, my mother was one of the founders out in Trever of the, you know, the Western. Right. And she was a founder of many things in Kenosha County. The Women's and Children's Horizons, which is now
well, back then it was called, I can't remember what it was called. But you have to find the right people too.
Yeah.
A person that this is their interest to get that group. And, you know, it's sometimes difficult, but I don't think this is an insurmountable amount of money to in the community come up with.
And we do have a Facebook site. And just so you know, we didn't mention it, but the organization right now is up to about 45 members, I believe. And we're already getting a lot of good coverage on our Facebook site. So that's being.
We'll just start charging $10 a hit for it.
Well, we had a GoFundMe, but we couldn't get to the top level so you could like do searches on it. So we had to drop the GoFundMe program. But we're learning along the way, obviously.
Well, this won't go off of our agenda or our thoughts here, but I thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Yeah, we won't let it drop, and I'm sure Ed Gilmore won't let us let it drop. So, everyone's very aware of it, and this is it's Kenosha County, and it's a quality of life thing for Kenosha County, so we will try to help.
You know, there is another comment I'd like to make, that this is probably one of the last unaltered building from its original site. It has never had plumbing in it. The windows and the door, the floors, everything has been original. The roof has been replaced, but everything is still original from 1869. That's a long time ago.
Yep.
Again, thank you, and we will be reaching out to you.
Yep, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the vision reports. Facilities, operations, Mike.
Start with the ongoing project list. First one is the public safety building, upgrade security and the evidence ID zero. That's been on the list for a while. We have three components for that. One was doing some welding and some steel doors to reinforce them. That's been completed for a while. The other two components were installing card readers and electric door strikes and number of doors. We're about halfway through that. We're doing that in-house. Our staff is kind of plodding along with other things, and probably will be done in about 2 weeks is my guess. The third component is camera installation and pendants. We mounted on the wall and then pour around the collar too. Contractor ESG, who's installing all the cameras in the county at the different facilities, has that contract. And they're just finishing up another building, and they're going to start this one. So the cameras and everything have been ordered. As soon as they come in, they'll start that. That'll wrap up that project. Second one on the list is for the pretrial facility. It's a project to replace the caulking or the sealant between the precasts on the exterior. We have a consultant called IRS Roofing, who has a hardscaping component to their business, and they have touted that they could take on something like that and write the spec and get going for us. So we decided to give them a try and see how that goes, because we have future projects that way too. They had speculated that the bids would come in around $45,000, and bids actually came in between $65,000 and $130,000. We asked them to analyze why, and it was our conclusion, their conclusion, that it was just a matter of the wrong time to bid. So what we're going to do is put that project on hold and rebid it in the spring, early spring. We originally had $75,000 in the project, and we've spent consultant fees and everything, we're down to about $60,000, $62,000, and the bids range from $65,000 to $130,000. So we're just gonna put that in hold, rebid it. We've asked Jim to put $25,000 extra in the budget, just in case. We'll hope for the best. So that's where that one's at. The next project list is for the energy savings team. That's one everybody has. It's a spreadsheet. Anything in red is the changes from last meeting we had. And if you'll notice, status change, there's four projects that are now at the bidding point. The bids are actually due Wednesday. So at that point, we'll know who can supply us with fixtures for four more exterior projects, and then we'll get started on those. The first two that we're going to do are weather related, and then we're trying to do the parking lot first, and get that one done before it's too cold. And the second one is actually inside of the spoke, where we're going to do the highway garage and the maintenance bay for mechanics inside and get that lighting changed. I think that's probably going to fall when the weather is bad outside anyway. If you look at the projected completion date, two in red up there, those are the two that will go next year before. Our in-house electrician is doing all that work, so he's got his hands full getting the two done this year, and the next year he'll take on the other two. Once that's done, that'll complete every facility that we have with lighting being converted to LED. It's a big, big milestone, and then we'll start working on interior lighting. That's it.
Right.
I just wanted to add something to Mike's report about the pretrial building. The consultant that we use for that, IRS, that's who we use historically. They've done all our roofs. They're the ones that did the roof specs for the one that came in really good. That is their sweet spot. There's no doubt. That's their core business. They've expanded over the past few years to do entire building envelopes. This was our first use of them in that regard. We had interviewed some others. We thought these guys have done such a good job, we'd give them a shot, but Mike and I are very much rethinking using them going forward. We're thinking that at this point, their business may still just be, their sweet spot remains roofs. They may not be able to handle the rest of the other stuff based on how this kind of came in. So I just wanted the committee to be aware of that, that we don't use these guys unless we know that they're the guys to use for that particular application. And in this case, I'm not sure that they're going to be the firm we use going forward for building envelope analysis.
You're anticipating a spring rebid for that pretrial area?
We'll probably try to get it ready to go like either very at the end of this year or early, like January, early, like before the season. That seems to be the best time, although this year it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because there just appears to be so many construction projects going on right now. All the trades are really, really busy.
We'll be good for one more time. It's not an issue with that.
No.
Yeah.
Are there any questions for Mike?
I guess I have one.
Yes.
With the camera upgrade that you were talking about, does that include this building?
No, that's a whole separate thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is that here?
The cameras for the buildings that you're referring to are IT projects.
Okay. So will there be an upgrade to the cameras that are on this building at some point?
It's going to be budgeted. IT's budgeting to do this building next year.
Okay.
In the 17 budget. Yep.
Okay, great.
Anything else for Mike? You're going to find out a little bit more in the next report here about timing on bidding here. One of the projects. So Ray, are you doing Frank?
Yeah, I'm going to take care of Frank. Frank's on vacation. He's getting married this weekend, actually. So the fire alarm replacement project at the courthouse, those designs, the actual master design for that is still pending state approval, but we've gotten enough feedback from them that we've tentatively scheduled mobilization for that. The contractor's already on board and everything, 9/26. So we've been kind of promised by the state they'll have things approved before then. So we've already got the contractor lined up to start to mobilize on the 26th, tentatively. And then that project would take the better part of 5 to 6 months. They're projecting a completion date of March 1st next year. But that's going to, as I've explained before, kind of its tentacles throughout the entire courthouse building. And because of the historical nature of that building, it's going to be a kind of a nip and tuck as opposed to a blowing things up and doing things roughshod. So it's going to be a 5 to 6 month project, but we're moving at least towards getting that going. It's the next one that was the interesting one, the PSB generator replacement. Kept the committee informed on this. The bids were due on 8/22. We received zero bids for the project. It's a decent sized project. It's roughly a couple hundred thousand is what we're estimating. The electrical contractors, when we contacted all the locals, which isn't many anymore, there's only about three, what I'd say, local contractors that are capable of doing this kind of a project, electrical contractors. None of them have gotten quotes back from any of the generator manufacturers. Generac, Cummins, what's the third one? Kohler. Those were the three biggies. I think Caterpillar as well as the generator manufacturer. I think those were the four that were listed. None of the electrical subcontractors had gotten any bids back from because of the what they were told was there's no capacity within those manufacturers to even put quotes together. Between the flooding down south, the fires out west, there's no manufacturing capacity in any of the generator manufacturers to accommodate this. So the one contractor, I think it was Lee, had gotten finally gotten a quote back from, I think it was Generac, the day the bids were due. So it was too late for them to kind of put everything together. So what we did is we during the course of the bid while it was open, there were RFIs, requests for information that came in from some of the contractors to clarify some of the technical specifications. We basically incorporated that information into the bid and put it back out for bid on the 2nd. And we gave them another 4 to 5 weeks. 10-4 is when they're due back in. A number of them felt they would be able to get numbers from the manufacturers by that point. We also solicited electrical contractors. I believe we went out west as far as Janesville. There was a couple in Milwaukee, and I think some south of the border that Frank contacted in an attempt to make them aware of it, just so that we can get, when we do get bids, hopefully we'll get 3 to 5 bids in, so we've got something to select from. But it's an interesting commentary on what's going on, because we figured we'd at least get a bid or two. There was nobody that bid, and that was kind of the story we got. Also, the one electrical contractor indicated that his estimator or estimating team is working 70 to 80 hours a week putting bids together, and whenever companies get that busy, they cream. It's the natural thing. You only go after the work you know you're going to make good margins on. And this is not really an easy job. It's kind of technically complicated. So that could be part of what's going on too. So we're going to give it another shot by next meet. It'll be actually, the bids will be due right after. I think we meet on the 3rd, so the bids will be due the next day. But hopefully we'll have some insight into what kind of response we're going to get. So that's what's going on with that project. The PSP addition for this, or addition build out of the 2nd floor. What's going to happen is we're going to propose as part of the budget, the 2017 budget, kind of a law enforcement package of things, which is going to be capital projects, which is going to be the 2nd floor build out. And then it appears that we're most definitely going to have to move the fleet maintenance function out of the safety building in order to get the medical examiner into the safety building. So there's kind of a number of moving pieces there. Also, over the years, there's been talk, probably for about 20 years, to put a storage building out at the detention center. So there's some things that may tie that functionality to the PSB as well. So there's a number of pieces that are all going to be put together in the county executive's budget as a law enforcement capital project. This is going to be a piece of that. So as far as what we're going to do as staff yet through the end of the year is we're just going to finish the design process and get things ready for bid level specifications designed by the end of the year so that we could go out for bid either at the end of the year or early next year after the budget. Hopefully some of this stuff will get approved and we'll be able to do some of these things next year. So that's kind of where that whole thing is at. And the last project Frank's working on right now that's significant is we had kind of the kickoff meeting for the courtroom branch 4 remodeling on August 26th, just to fine tune the concept plans that the architect had developed, met with the judge and his staff, went through everything. Plan on those design specifications being done by the end of the year and being able to go out for that again at the end of the year and get bids back in January early, so before construction contractors get their plates too full. This is going to be an interesting year because from what we hear, most construction contractors are very busy, and there's a number of public projects that people are putting off until after the 1st of the year because the prevailing wage law gets lifted January 1st. The initial thought, kind of the superficial thought, is that that's going to result in a lot of savings. Well, if most of the union contractors have union contracts in place that still go out 2 to 3 years beyond January 1st. So they're not going to be in position to do anything. And if everybody's as busy as they are, the market's going to rule. So, but I'm told that there is a number of larger municipal projects that people are holding on until after the first year to bid them. They may just be out of, there may be out of capacity by the time they do what they're going to do. So we're still looking at getting all our projects ready to bid by December, get them out on the street so we can get our bids back in early January. And that's the strategy we're using because it's very busy. And there's been articles in the papers just the last few weeks about the construction trades. And to me, that's going to be a bigger issue for everybody, private and public, for the next few years. Because if you go, when we do take a tour of the Brookside site, if you look around, you're going to see anywhere from 40 to 60 trades guys there in the full range of trades, from plumbers to electricians to carpenters to roofers, and you'll be hard-pressed to find anybody on the job that's under 50 years of age, just walking through. They're just tradespeople. There's going to be a critical shortage of these people going into the next 5 to 10 years, and I don't know that anybody's really wise to that yet. So I just bring that up because it's going to impact us at some point.
So that's Frank's, what he's got going on. And so the committee, if you paid attention to this, the complete law enforcement package that Ray was talking about, that's going to be over, my understanding, about a 4-year period.
Right.
So at budget time, I mean, everybody will have to be working on that and have the knowledge that that is, it's going to be a large, complete, but complex package also over a 4-year period, doing that second floor build out, doing these other projects that Ray talked about. So I'm sure that'll be a lot of it through judiciary law, but a lot of it through this committee and a full county board, so everybody understands what we'll be looking at. And the bidding problem that we ran into there, that's nothing new when you're looking around. I mean, since what people have called the Great Recession, we lost half the contractors I knew. So I called a very dear friend yesterday that runs a large paving company. And I have a couple customers that we don't do asphalt paving. But they always ask me, who do we get? You know, and so I'm like, I'll get the guy for you. He'll be out this week to talk to you. I called him and he said, we don't have time this year. Because there's nobody anymore. They all got out of residential paving because there was no homes being built. So, you know, I mean, there's very few of these guys around there. Very few of anybody. In the old days, when you said there was 3 electrical contractors in Kenosha, my God, there used to be 20, and they were all big. You know, they worked all over. So we're going to run into those problems. Mm-hmm. And we may have to stretch, you hate to say it. But I mean, we found out this year that we did very well looking for employees in Walworth County.
Right.
I mean, we may have to stretch west. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ray. We'll move on to Mr. Sitchma.
The first item I have is consideration of a resolution to approve the appointment of Roger Johnson to the Kenosha County Traffic Safety Commission. This is a resolution from the county executive to appoint Roger Johnson to the commission. And it was it requires county board approval, and this resolution has been referred to this committee by the county board chairman. Just to give you a quick background on the Traffic Safety Commission, in case you're not familiar with it, that commission is a requirement by state statute that every county must have a Traffic Safety Commission. Made up of various representatives, at least some of the representatives must be from the disciplines of education, medicine, law, law enforcement, highways, and then there's also citizen representation on the committee. Basically, what the committee does is it collects data from traffic accidents and information that is available from various sources about traffic-related matters, and it takes all that data, it reviews it, it comes up with some recommendations to correct any deficiencies there may be, and then those recommendations are sent to the appropriate local government or whoever's responsible for that particular highway or road. There is no differentials in municipal boundaries in this commission. It goes across the board from town, county, city, village. It reviews any matter related to traffic safety. So that's what the commission does. The resolution here is actually a reappointment of Roger Johnson to the commission. I can just say that I've been on the commission myself for many, many years, and Roger has been a consistent participant in the commission, and he certainly brings a lot of experience and practical viewpoint for the committee when they consider these matters. So I don't know if Roger wants to add anything about yourself.
I appreciate
Roger's
that.
There.
This is my third term going on to this committee. I've enjoyed it. We meet every 3 months. Like Gary said, I brought up a lot of issues. Everybody's kind of looked at them and kind of went for it. And I just would like to keep doing it.
Supervisor Dane has just made a motion to approve.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Bostrom. Any discussion?
Yes. Just a comment. I just want to thank Mr. Johnson for showing up this evening. It's kind of refreshing to see an appointee actually show up to one of the committees. So thanks for showing up.
Good.
Good.
Any discussion? If not, all those in favor of youth and governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Yes, thank you, Ryder.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing it.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Gary. Mm-hmm.
The next item I had is a resolution to approve the jurisdictional transfer agreement of County Trunk Highway M between State Trunk Highway 31 and County Trunk Highway KR. This would jurisdictionally transfer the maintenance responsibility of this highway from Kenosha County to the village of Summers. I did attach a map. Highway M is actually a section of old State Trunk Highway 31. It's currently referred to as Old Green Bay Road. Before they relocated Highway 31, that was a State Trunk Highway. When they did relocate Highway 31 years ago, it was pretty obvious that this section of highway did not meet any of the qualifications of a county trunk highway. It has very low traffic volume. It's actually considered a local road from a classification standpoint. And at that time, the town of Summers just didn't feel they were able to take on additional maintenance responsibilities, and they recently approached us saying that, you know, that they're in a better position now as a village to be able to correct some of these things that happened in the past. So what this would do is jurisdictionally transferred to the village, and we would no longer be responsible for the maintenance of it. The village would take over. So that's a little of the history of that.
And for the committee, I mean, Supervisor Grady.
Don't you want to say something?
No, I was going to say, this is something you'll hear a lot. I mean, we do, maybe not every meeting, but we'll do 3 or 4 of these a year. And it saves us a ton of money. It's usually a good deal.
It's a win-win situation, basically. They want the responsibility for the roadway, we don't have to maintain it, which is quite expensive. So when that happens, at very least, good deal for the county, good deal for the taxpayers. Just 2 questions here, Gary. Do we have to do anything, first of all, in terms of additional modification, road work, anything to have a certain condition before it turned over? Is it as is?
It's as is. There is a bridge on this section of Old Green Bay Road, and the village was concerned about any future replacement costs on that. We did have the bridge re-inspected this year. There was some very minor items having to do, mostly I think it was with beam guard.
Yeah, beam guard.
Not even with the structure, bridge structure itself. And we would expect, you know, easily another 50 years of life out of the bridge. So that we will have an agreement with the village about any shared costs for replacement of that bridge, but that that actually it is a standard procedure on any bridge on a town road. So it's not putting us in any different position than we would normally be. So other than that, it's all as is. It's in good condition and properly signed, and there's no other outstanding issues with it.
The bridge, if it had to be replaced and we had some agreement, would be in the configuration that it's in. If they want to widen it to 4 lanes or something, we would not have responsibility for that type of improvement.
No, we would not, for several reasons. One is that I don't think the traffic volumes on that road will ever warrant a 4 lane, but also, any county trunk highway within the limits of a village, we are only responsible for the center 22 feet. So anything that a village would recommend above and beyond that, they would be responsible for the cost.
So assuming we approve this evening, what's the timeline? When would this actually go through?
This would, it also requires approval by the village board, and I believe they might be doing that tonight or this week. And then we send it to the state, and it becomes effective on January 1st.
So minimum, perhaps, no impact this year if we can get this thing done?
It will, yeah, we will, as of January 1st, we will no longer be responsible for the maintenance.
Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? January 1st, they start paying us for snow plowing.
They'll be responsible for it completely.
Right. Moved by Supervisor Grady to approve the resolution.
Second
by Supervisor Gilmore. Further discussion? If not, you the governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you, Gary.
The third item is another jurisdictional transfer agreement, and this is kind of a follow-up to a previously approved jurisdictional transfer. This one is County Trunk Highway S, which is also known as Washington Road, between Highway 31 and 39th Avenue. This jurisdictional transfer was actually approved back in August of 2015. However, it was approved on a resolution that included a section of Highway N west of I-94. So both of those segments of County Trunk Highway were approved to be jurisdictionally transferred to the city of Kenosha. What happened since that time is there's been some dispute, I don't know if it's a dispute, but the municipal boundaries of Highway N are not completely within the city's municipal boundaries as we speak. The municipal boundary kind of zigzags back and forth. So part of Highway N is in the town of Paris, part of Highway N is in the city of Kenosha. So we can't jurisdictionally transfer a highway to the city of Kenosha unless it's 100% within the municipal boundaries of that municipality, in this case, city of Kenosha. So since that issue is not going to get resolved anytime soon, we want both the city and the county would like to go ahead and proceed with the jurisdictional transfer of Highway S. Highway S is the right-of-way of County Trunk Highway S is completely within the city of Kenosha municipal boundaries now, and typically when that happens, that's when a jurisdictional transfer happens. We do it in the Village of Pleasant Prairie and city, and you know, we just spoke about the one in the Village of Summers. So what this resolution does is it takes Highway N out of that previous approval, and we're just gonna do Highway S now and at least get that accomplished, and we'll take care of the Highway N issue when the time's appropriate.
Any questions? That's a pretty clear one. Moved by Supervisor Green.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Wendell. All those in favor, you in the government?
Aye.
Ready?
Aye.
What do you do? We didn't get the other one yet either.
Nope.
No, we got both. Okay.
Sure.
Hey, Gary. Anything else?
Clement has a report on some of status of the projects.
All aware we have a lot of work going on. So the past few months we have been very proactive and aggressive and reschedule, and we're trying to knock down all the projects. I'm happy to say that we think if things goes the way they are going right now, we might be able to knock down all of them, but then again, depends on the weather, it depends on other things and stuff like that. Some of the projects that I would just like to highlight will be the project on S&N, which is going on right now. They're doing grading work. The project is on schedule. No issues at this time. They're doing grading work. It's anticipated that the grading work will be completed by this Friday, and then we'll start seeing some curb and gutter. And so hopefully, if everything goes according to plan, weather depending, the entire work will be completed sometime in October. The other project I would like to talk about would be the resurfacing project on Highway C from State Trunk Highway 83 to County Trunk Highway JF. According to the schedule, the contractor is mobilizing as from today. You start seeing some activities on that road. The only important thing I would like to stress here is that the road will be closed again on September 19th because of railroad work. They're going to be repairing that railroad close to the Salem Industrial Park. And so I think they need about 5 days. So if everything works well from the 19th to the 23rd, they'll be done with their work. The county will be providing traffic control for them. The traffic will be detoured on JF. So going eastbound, if you take JF, you hit 83, and then you go back north, and then you hit C, and you can take the reverse route back. The other project that I wanted to talk about, the County Trunk Highway culvert replacement was completed, and no incident. It's up and running now. And we completed it on the scheduled time. There's some other projects that I would like to mention by this DOT project. 165 is going on. They've shifted traffic to the south side. All those who use that road will see that, and they've been doing a lot of improvements on the pavement. And in a couple of weeks, there will be some milling and resurfacing on that road as well. Coupled to that project is also Highway 50, which that repair has been completed. Two or three weeks ago, you were barrels on Highway 50 because they were doing a repair on the bridge. So that work was successfully completed and is all done. Those were the few projects I just wanted to highlight it, but there's a lot of other things going on that we can take the entire night and I'll not be able to complete them.
What's going on out by me between about Slade's Corners and Lake Coleman?
That is a utility project, and I'm not sure of the specifics of it because they don't send us the information.
Yeah, and when I saw it kept going after the county line, I thought, oh, that's not us.
Yeah, that's not us, and that's not a DOT project. It's a utility project.
Yeah, they just put out a bunch of
lots of barrels.
Right.
Clement, I was going to say, maybe mention what the guys are doing up on the interstate this week, because that's kind of an unusual.
Yeah, on the interstate. I usually try to stay away from the interstate because whenever they see people on the interstate, they consider the DOT project, but we actively participate in the maintenance of the freeway. Starting as from tonight, we'll be repairing the ramps on E. We'll be doing, I think, the off ramps and the on ramps on E. So we're going to be milling and overlaying, and we're going to be doing some shoulder work on the main line. Recently, we've also been doing some base patching work on, not base patching, because panel replacements on the freeways and on 31 and on Highway 50. I can still go on. There's so many works that are coming up. Very soon, we'll be doing crack sealing on the frontage roads, and we'll be doing some resurfacing work on the frontage roads as well. So we do a lot of work on the freeway, but we, as usual, we are very quiet because we usually do them without any incidents. So.
And that's third shift this time.
Say that again?
That's third shift, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so
I'll be there. If you want to observe how we do night work, you can meet me sometime. I can make it comfortable when it's safe for you to come and see what we do at night. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So on these projects such as that one, it's the on and off ramps for E, mm-hmm. to the interstate. Are we acting as a contractor of the state? The state is paying us to do this, or how is that?
Correct. Yeah.
So it's just time and material, or do we make any money on it, or we just get reimbursed for expenses, or what?
We get reimbursed, and then there's a 4% administrative fee that we, so it's not really a profit, but it pays for our administrative costs.
There's really not any engineering involved. It's just replacing existing infrastructure, right?
Correct.
But we have guys working overtime. Some of our employees are happy, some aren't, because they ask for volunteers like this nighttime stuff, and you got some.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had guys back working Fridays and Saturdays, right? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, we've been working five. Our normal work week is 4 10-hour days, right. Monday through Thursday, but we've been working every Friday now too, because we just have so much mostly asphalt paving projects to complete yet before the end of the year. And then we've been trying to get our county work completed, and then we're really going to concentrate on the state work from this point on to get those done. And of course this week will be a big step in getting that I-94 project completed. And they only allow us to reduce the interstate to two lanes between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. So that's why we're working at night.
And it wears out our equipment quicker, but it pays for it quicker.
It does.
Yeah. Just a comment, if you would, on how we are doing with our asphalt program. I know we're pretty ambitious this year. We're trying to get a lot of things done. Municipalities have wanted their things done. So. Just ballpark, how far along are we?
Yeah, I would say that reviewing the schedule that we have today. I didn't have the opportunity to share with Gary. We practically done all of our in-house paving except one segment of JBE so far. But there are other sections that we are working on. There are other projects that we're not doing it in-house, we're doing it with contractors. So far, I would say we're about 80% complete most of our project schedule.
We're for this schedule, year. Basically.
Well, I would hold back a little bit on that because of some of the nature of the projects that we have right now. It might be 80%, but the nature of the projects that we have right now entails a lot. So, especially working on the freeway and the frontage roads. Yeah.
Thank you. Anything else, Clement?
Yeah, and the only thing I want to add, if you want to see some of our projects, let me know. I'll show you the high quality of work that we do.
I get up at 4 in the morning, Clem. I don't watch highways at 4 in the morning. I watch the news. Gary.
Done.
Parks, Matthew.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First thing you have in front of you is two considerations for resolutions, and we spoke about this before, but in order to apply for grants with the DNR require resolutions from the county board to be in conjunction with what we're applying for. So I'll be reviewing both of those in front of your committee today in order to proceed and apply by October 1st for these grant opportunities. The first one is through the DNR Urban Forestry Grant, and the grant allows the Division of Parks to apply for a cost-sharing grant to reforest trees located at Fox River Park and Brightondale Links Golf Course. This is basically our third grant for reforestation after the Emerald Ash Borer took out approximately 4,000 of our trees through the park system. So any grants that we can receive through 2017 would be a positive impact in order to reforest all these parks. So this is a cost-sharing grant opportunity. The total grant amount and award would be $49,055. But considering the in-kind labor that we as the Parks and Golf Division would be contributing, the actual cost of the 2017 budget would be $7,248. And that would include the staffing, as I said, about 116 trees for both of those parks, gator bays, and some other protective materials to ensure that those trees do survive.
Any questions? Could I have a motion? So moved. Supervisor Grady to approve the applying for the grant.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Basho. All in favor of you, Kevin?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye. The second one is also through the DNR for the County Conservation AIDS grant. It's a smaller one, but again, this is what they need in order for us to apply. Last year we received a grant to stock muskies in the Fox River, and actually we're anticipating stocking about next week, I think, already in the Fox River, so we're just planning out the details of that one. So the plan for next year's conservation aid would be stocking KD Park. Now that we have more access to KD Park and the lake, we thought it would be a good idea to bring more fish species to that habitat. So the total grant is for $1,484 with a cost sharing of $742 from the county.
What species for
I knew you would ask. We have channel catfish, walleye, northern pike, rainbow trout. Those are the other species that we can put in. It depends on the different species. The walleye can get 11 inches or more, and depending on the time of the season that you actually stock. So we might, depending on if we receive this grant, you could do a spring stock with some of the other like catfish species, and then hold off for the fish to kind of incubate and grow, and then release them more in the fall.
Those species are all in there right now.
That's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You see the news this morning where a 5-pounder almost hit a woman taking a walk?
A 5-pounder?
A catfish came out of the sky.
Wait, what?
Seriously.
What news source was this?
Oh, quite rich. This is on WTMJ this morning. It's a 5-pound catfish.
Really?
And the only thing they can assume is that a very large bird.
Oh, it's scary.
Had walked him and dropped it out of his
hand. Wow.
They had pictures of that catfish laying there.
Not April 1st.
Right. Oh, it is. So.
Well, we have recreational immunity if that happens with KV. We'll be okay.
So, we have a motion for this.
But then if it gets dropped on one of our state trunk highways, then we got a problem.
You got to talk to Garrett.
Move to approve.
Second.
Supervisor Bob, second by Supervisor Wemble. All those in favor, give your order.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Matt.
I'll pass around a couple updated pictures. The first ones are some updated pictures on KD Park with the roadway development that I took after the fact of submitting this report just to see where we are with this project. And then the second stack is, as Supervisor Elman stated, our last Oktoberfest. So I took a bunch of cool pictures with that one and decided to share with our Oktoberfest event. Yep. As far as status reports, as you've heard numerous times with our Emerald Ash Borer tree removal, we have been doing a fantastic job, including with our summer use employee program. Really helped out with the brush lines. All of our stump grinding is complete on the park side of things. We do have some minor ash tree removals at Silver Lake Park. That wasn't part of the contracted service, so we'll be gearing up to do some ash tree removal within Silver Lake Park this late fall. As far as KD Park, with the project pictures that you've seen attached and I'm passing around, everything's on schedule as far as that project is going. We've completed the clearing, grubbing, excavation of topsoil placement and culvert pipes, and the highway is scheduled to pave that starting next week, Monday, on the 19th. Petrifying Springs Park, one of our budget items for the 2016 budget was to clean and televise the sanitary sewer within that park, just because it is about 40 years old now. We wanted to see what condition it truly is before things got away from us. So it was about 5,400 feet that we cleaned and televised of an 8-inch concrete sanitary sewer. And it actually turned out pretty good that given the magnitude and the length of that sanitary sewer, the total estimated cost is about $68,800 that is recommended to do in a 3-year phasing. So there's nothing detrimental to the system as of now, so this can wait until the 2018 budget to start to gear up for some minor repair work on that sanitary sewer. As far as Fox River Park, we did finish paving, so that was completed. But the larger part of it, since it was an overlay, was doing the road shoulders and doing a lot of topsoil and grading, because it added 6 to 8 inches in some parts of that pavement where that old topsoil and grass was. So it was a great project for our summer youth employee program, but it did basically a mile stretch of topsoil and grade work. And now we're just finalizing on the seeding and straw within that area. And we also finished striping of all those parking lots over there. Silver Lake Park, I discussed the last year with, we added 9 holes of disc golf. So we have a full 18-hole course over at Silver Lake Park. It's more of a championship style. So it's really renowned, especially on social media. It's always talked about is how popular that park is becoming because of how challenging it is. And even for myself, I recommended for my superintendent to take out a couple more trees because I got pretty frustrated playing it myself. But we're gearing up for the final part of that is the tee pads, which really makes it popular and hopefully can bring more scheduled activities and events to that course. So we're working on the tee pads and hopefully we'll finish up this fall with that project. And as I said, it's a very successful year for the Summer Youth Employment Program. I'm not going to go into the details with all of their accomplishments, but I thought it would be noteworthy to list them on there to really show how important they are to our park system. And if they weren't around, there's no way that our staff internally would be able to complete all those projects. So it was a great collaborative effort between those Summer Youth employees and our park staff to complete a lot of those projects. And then as far as upcoming events, as we said before, this weekend on Saturday is the Fall Fun Fest and International Migratory Bird Day at Pringle Nature Center. So we kind of helped with the operation setting that up, and then the Pringle Nature Center puts that event on in collaboration. We have a Pike River cleanup. That's a huge one that we work with Kenosha Sports Fishing and Conservation Association. And they not only help out and assist within Pets Park and Area Number 6 is kind of their hub, where they bring all the tires, fridges, and whatever else they find along the Pike River, but they also go through UW Parkside and a lot of other critical areas where they try to remove log jams and bring in heavy equipment and chainsaws to try to make sure that all the fish can spawn further upstream. So it's a huge event and very successful and volunteer-driven event. October 1st is the County Executive Fall Wheel Ride. That ends at Petrifying Springs Park, so it's something that the County Executive puts on an annual basis, and we help support, do the routes, and put on activities at the finish line at Pets at Area 1. And then the final one that I listed on here is October 28th, Silver Lake Halloween evening mountain bike ride. This is the first they're trying, but I'm guessing that they're going to have lights when they do this. But pretty popular for mountain bikers to be having an evening mountain bike ride. So our mountain bike folks and partners keep putting that event on. And that is all I have.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
That was great. Just a comment on the summer youth program that's just wrapped up now. It's what year? How many years? Four, three?
It's more than that.
It's gotta be maybe six.
2008, I thought they started. That's when they started. Either 8 or 9. I read on.
We didn't all
know. No, 9. Yeah, it would have been 9. Yeah.
Because I think they started coming out with their new crime rates and how much that has dropped since the start of that program. And they used 2008 numbers as their benchmark, and then 2009
was the year. Yep.
And they just came out with this year's numbers, and it was a reduction of crime, juvenile crime, by 72% this year. So all-time record. For
did we use them? Because I mean, we didn't know that KD land until when?
Weren't they the first ones?
Or not the KD land, but they weren't out there. We didn't know where our parks division works out of now until, what, 3.5, 4 years?
Right, but we first used them, it was 2009, because I came back in 2008, and it was 2009, I remember Donna Rhodes, the gang prevention.
We used them in here then.
We used them at Pets.
Okay, yeah.
We used them, I don't think, we might have started to rough in some of the trails at KD that first year, if not, it was the second year that we started that with them.
Yeah, not back then.
But there was Pets work, because I remember one of the big projects was painting all of the little spring-mounted things for the kids to ride at Pets, the little horses and stuff. And one of the best lessons was after the kids did that, and they were really artistic, did a really pro job on it, a bunch of them got vandalized. And the feeling that those kids experienced after putting all that work into it was a golden learning moment. And so it was, that was when you really saw the value of that program, because they, the sense of violation they felt, it was like, okay, you get this now? And so it was, I think that they still use that as a teachable moment to those
kids. I think it's huge from the first I saw. I mean, the first group I saw out there, it was rough.
Rough.
And now what they accomplished. I mean, I actually sat there and watched one of our supervisors. They had their people out there. We had that one guy. And they had a wheelbarrow, and they had riprap like this that they were, and they had a wheelbarrow over there, and they were taking a rock and throwing it, trying to get it in there. You know, this is how they were doing it. And they said, okay, this was when we had the Katy Park, and we had moved into the new shop. I heard one of the kids saying, if you think I'm walking all the way to effing Egypt out, because we had them putting wood chips on the other side of the trail, you're out of your effing mind. He's telling this to the woman that's running the group. And I looked at our poor parks guy and I said, oh my God. He said, oh, this is, but now
it's,
they tell me it's so different.
Yeah.
And they're taking these guys and what they did at the park. Well, you talk about boredom, raking wood chips out of where they've stumped ground on ash tree and then putting dirt in there. you want to see somebody go print it, but they accomplished all of it, and then a whole lot this summer. And it's not, you know, the most satisfactory, some of it isn't, you know, but they're getting a whole lot out of these kids. And they're getting a lot.
And they're getting a lot. I think they beefed up their classroom training and just the basic life skills of getting out of bed, getting to a job, making that commitment. Those are the things that a lot of these kids don't have that structure to provide that. So this is providing it. And they've gotten better. The Boys and Girls Club have gotten much better at that programming, so it does it work. Because Joe and Nick, the two foremen that has the first year, you know, they were ready to string John up. Like, right. what did you do to us? Right. And but it's really...
But now it's labor that we get done. Mm-hmm. You know, and naturally the taxpayer is paying it, but we're not.
Right.
We got to let out of the parks budget.
One of the things I wanted to bring forward is that it's been a work in progress. You see it a little bit better each year. You know, it is an example, a very concrete example, of how different entities can work. You know, you always hear in the Kenosha news differences politically between this group and that group. Well, here you have actually a four-year project where it's benefiting everyone. It doesn't get a lot of press, but, you know, your taxpayers, constituents ask you, what are you doing? Are you always fighting, you know, between yourself and municipality and county? Well, no, not always. We do get things done. So.
And the biggest thing is the reduction in crime.
Right, right.
That's the one that happened. That's the one you want people to hear. Give a guy a job. You know, something to do.
We made sure they retired at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's my comment.
So you got it, Matt?
That is it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh.
Well, our next big initiative is tomorrow. We have the County Executive Cup golf outing, and we have 128 players currently signed up for it. So we're hoping for some good weather. We're going to have lunch, play 18, have dinner. We're raising funds for our junior golf program. This year we had 110 in the junior clinics. We had 24 in the PGA Junior League, and we had 10 more in an after-school program. So we had a lot of juniors that we've helped introduce to the game to and help them get better, and hopefully did some soul searching and getting a little bit more well-rounded by meeting others and gaining some friends and learning the life lessons that golf can teach. So this fundraiser is going to be a great day tomorrow. We're targeting hopefully kind of a launch monitor for future teaching of these kids with those funds that we're raising from last year and this year. The junior clinic wrapped up in August. We had a parent-child tournament on the 7th of August at 3:00 at Brightdale. We had 94 participants, which was a father or a parent-child tournament, and that was over double what we had last year. I think we had 44 in 15, and so a lot of people had very, very positive comments. They thought that the junior clinic was run really well, that the kids really enjoyed it, that they learned a lot, and so that went well. The PGA Junior League, we kind of got a little bit hornswoggled on that victory. We've been the champion for the last 3 years, and then this year we were 5-0-1, one tie, and Strawberry Creek was 5-0, and so by that one tie, they took the lead over us for the championship. So they went on and they played Lake Geneva, who they lost to, but now Lake Geneva is going to the regionals up in Minnesota. So it was a lot of fun for all the kids between 8 and 13. They really had a good time that in that event. And it was an 8-week event, and they learned a lot about golf and competition. So the Caddy and Leadership Academy of Southeast Wisconsin at PETS really went well again. We did have a little bit of problem getting the kids out, so we're looking at addressing that situation. We're thinking about the possibility of switching them over to Brightondale Links for next year. We have five nines there compared to, you know, our two at Petrifying Springs, and we think that we might be able to get more kids out because the more participants over at Brightondale, and we're thinking that they would get out quicker. So it wouldn't take so much effort on the Caddy Master. So there's a possibility that that happens, but we did have a wrap-up party on Monday, August 15th, and we had 65 people, which was about 25 more than last year, attend that last year. So that was, it was a very nice event for everybody. The new food and beverage manager at Petrifying Springs, Kim Lipkin, is really working out well. She has a lot of experience from Bigfoot Country Club, and she came with a lot of energy and really has brought some good new ideas. So, you know, she's fitting in well. Right now, all of the tees and fairways at Brightondale Links have been aerified, so we've taken core air reading. All of that is done. We've also done the red greens at Brightondale, and then we're going to be doing the white right starting Monday, and then we'll finish up with the blue. So we'll always have you know, at least 18 holes or 27 holes that are in good shape when everybody comes out to Brightondale. As far as Petrifying Springs, we'll be doing that, I think it's the 26th of September, right after our big weekend there. You know, the earlier that we can do the aerification, then the quicker that the greens hold up. So that's just a necessary evil, but that makes the courses in as good a shape as they have been. We have booked three new leagues already for 2017. We've kind of tried to consolidate all the leagues this year at Petrifying Springs, and we found room for two new ones over there, and there's one new one at Brightondale. So this is a great accomplishment. It's a weekly business, and you know, it's our lifeblood really at Pets. I mean, it's really what pumps that place up. So. Projects that we're working on, the ash tree removal continues. All the grinding is done, all the filling and seeding is done at Brightondale, but Petrifying Springs, we still have holes that we have to dig out and put the dirt in and seed. So they will be coming back this winter to remove about 300 more trees over at Brightondale. So we'll be doing that again next year. And right now we're looking at doing some bunker removal at Brightondale. And the reason why we're doing that is if we can remove some of them, we can pay more attention to the ones that we still have to make them in better condition. It is our biggest complaint from our guests is the conditions of the bunkers. We have went through this with Todd Quintino from Loman Golf Design, making sure that all of the bunkers will be redesigned into either grass hollows or grass depressions or mounds, whatever makes sense in that area, so that they are still a playing feature, but we just won't have to get in and rake them, and that'll reduce the maintenance fees a great deal. We just got done with the paving at Petrifying Springs, thanks to the highway department. They did a tremendous job. They came in, and within 2 days, they did the two main stretches of the parking lot. They started all the way back at the maintenance building, and they pulled the whole road all the way up to the third parking lot and did that. There's still a small stretch between the hiking trail and Highway A that they're going to have to come back and do, but did a phenomenal job. It looks great. It's really a smooth ride now, so hopefully this really helps our equipment stay in so much better condition and keeps our guests happy from, you know, going through the pothole in the parking lot. So overall, we've been extremely busy. I mean, we were talking before the meeting, and last year was our record, and this year, you know, we were even through August still ahead of our record slightly, you know, so it's been a great season, and we're looking forward to an excellent fall season. You know, we've got a lot of events coming up. We've got quite a few corporate outings and fundraising outings in September, and then we have our Senior Scramble October 7th, and we have our Brightondale Open is October 15th. And then we have the Halloween Horror, which is a really fun tournament the last weekend in October. So those are our own tournaments from our golf division. So a lot of good things happening and progressing at the golf courses.
Amanda, do we have a plan on how to keep our food and beverage
Well, this one really comes with unique desires, okay? She doesn't really want to work during the winter. She wants to have off. She wants to travel. They love the area. They've already are selling their house. They've got an offer on their house in Walworth. They want to move over here. Her son runs Huhut, the general manager there, so they want to just stay here and travel and work during the season and have off in the winter. So,
right. And I just wanted to add something to piggyback on the paving project, because what we ended up doing, we just put down, it's about an inch and a quarter, maybe inch and a half, as just something that's going to buy us about five, maybe plus years, because we started to look, as I think we reported to the committee a few months back, there's going to need to be some pretty significant changes made to really address what's underneath the road and the shop and stuff. And it doesn't appear, given all of the other stuff we've got on our plate from a capital improvement standpoint, we're going to be able to invest in that. So we decided to put this in. It's about a $50,000 investment, but it basically eliminates all of the potholes that were in. If anybody's golf there, yeah, they know what condition it's in or was in. We wanted to address those from a safety standpoint and from an equipment standpoint. Those greens mowers that Dan's got, you know, they literally adjust those things within, I'm going to say, thousandths of an inch for accuracy. And it was really, it was like a moonscape there. So we did this just to at least buy us five plus years. It gives us time to get our ducks in a row and really design something that makes sense from a shop standpoint and infrastructure there, kind of the back office aspect of the golf operation there, because it really hasn't had any attention for decades. And this buys us, so we kind of did it as an investment, a short-term investment.
How many of you have you been here now?
This is my eighth season.
Eighth year. I was thinking it was like 10 or close to it, but it's come so far different 10 years ago. Since Dan's been here, we were out of business, basically. And now you have two record years. It's amazing.
Thank you. And one thing about the paving, too, you know, once we've done all the potholes and everything else, but I mean, Clement will tell you, you know, once you overlay just that type of spiderwebbed pavement, it's going to come back. You know, it's going to.
Yeah, it's just a band-aid.
It's a band-aid.
Yeah. And we realize that, and we've known for a long time this has to be a longer term, tear it up, do it all again. My question to you is, when we look at doing that in the future, is it going to be just what we have existing, where there's really not a lot of engineering needs to go into it, or is this one of these things where we have to do engineering in the whole nine yards?
We're going to get strategic. We had Gary, Clement, we all went out there about maybe 2 months ago, and like where the shop is located right now, it really doesn't make any sense anymore to have it back there. We're going to pull that way up to where that storage shed is now, kind of on the east side of the clubhouse. It will still be hidden from view, but that would eliminate the need to even have that road going back there and any of that stuff, because the soils up there are horrible, the hydrology is horrible, it's just a mess. And so if we can eliminate all that stuff, long term it'll be much easier and cheaper to maintain. And we still will need to access the pump house, but that is a minimal thing, so we don't need to maintain a paved road for that. We won't be needing to drive equipment and so forth over it. We can straighten out the way you take your carts right now to get access to the back nine. The bottom line is all going to be done from a strategic kind of standpoint.
So going forward, do you think we'll have some type of clue as to when the big redesign would come on? We're looking at 4 years, 5 years, we have a...
I'd say realistically it's going to be probably, we'll probably have the design in 3 to 4, but we probably won't actually start do it in earnest probably in year 4 to 5, probably out that far. Because I think there's just enough other stuff between law enforcement and some of these other things we've got on our plate, and that's probably realistically the time we'd be looking at.
Any other questions?
all set, Dan?
Yep.
That's it. Thank you very much. Okay, Ray.
Brookside update. Yeah, again, at the end of this, I'd like to get what day, if it's like a Saturday or Sunday, I'd like to stay away from, but a Saturday or any other night during the week that would be easy for the committee to get out there. We took the Brookside trustees out this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Bob Pitts, the chairman of that committee, wanted, and I think it was very informative for John sits on that committee as well, so he was there. And it's a good stage to see kind of what all is going on. You can still see where the soils issues were, and but by the same token, you can see the entire CBRF is all framed in. It's weather tight. You can get a very good sense of how it's going to feel from a design standpoint. I think that the committee was very impressed with the kind of the structural integrity of the building. It's very robust. It's not cheaply constructed. It's made to do exactly what it's supposed to do. It's going to be very quiet and a solid building, and it's designed with a very residential feel. So I like to get the committee out to take a look at it.
Question for you real quick. Someone asked me, are they moving the entrance to the west side, or is it staying where it is?
No, the main entrance will remain the main entrance. Okay. Where it is. There is an entrance on the west side, but the thought is that that's only going to be used after somebody is checked in or into that end of the facility, and if somebody wants to visit from that aspect, they can visit that way. They won't have to go on the other side, but kind of the main point of business is the main entrance on the east side, just like it is. The CBRF is completely weatherproof right now. That doesn't mean that all the windows are in yet, but the roof is completely sealed up. That's considered weatherproof from a construction standpoint. There's storefront windows, so there's large windows that look out into the courtyards. Those aren't installed yet. Those are supposed to be within the next 2 weeks. And then drywall will start. So drywall on CBRF is projected around October 1st. So it's coming up pretty quick where they're going to be able to start on that. The rehab unit is still behind, still playing catch up to that because of all the soils issues in that area. But that said, they're going to be setting the precast concrete panels this week, I think the 15th, that will form then the floor between the basement and the first floor in the north wing of the rehab unit. It's kind of a milestone thing, because once that's in place, everything can get backfilled around all of the construction, and wall framing, everything else will start to accelerate then on the two stories on each of those wings. The south wing of the rehab already has all the walls framed, trusses are across, and they're getting ready to actually pour. There's going to be a concrete floor between the first and second floor, so the steel pan is going to start to get installed this week. And I believe late next week they may be starting to pour the concrete floor on metal, which that'll be an interesting thing too, because I have not seen that type of a construction technique. Those are the big milestone things. Target is to have all of the new construction enclosed, weatherproof, I should say beyond weatherproof, fully enclosed by December 1st, so that's when they can really start to hammer all the internal stuff over the winter. We're still on track. The original target date for move-in was April 1st. It probably is realistically going to be May 1st right now if there's nothing else that happens. But that's pretty much where the project is at. We haven't had to chew into the contingency anymore, so I promised to let you know if we go from a yellow light to approaching that red light. We haven't had to chew in it anymore at this point. That's pretty much what's going on. What would be the easiest way to determine what date or times and dates would be appropriate for trying to set something up if there's an interest on the...
Well, you have a time of day that I'm sure is much more comfortable for a construction crews, right? I do that today.
We set it up at 3 o'clock, and we started the guys early this morning, so they were off-site at 3 o'clock. Then there's no need for hard hats and glasses and safety shoes and stuff.
They were done working, so it was empty.
Yeah, it was empty.
So who did the tour?
It was the job superintendent from Camozzi, the project manager from Camozzi, and myself.
They answered a lot of questions, so they had all the answers right there. So, I mean, I guess it'd be up to the committee who would like, who
who could be available and it would be most convenient. I probably want to do it before it gets to be 30 degrees.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's still daylight, good daylight.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was most impressive seeing it without the drywall.
Right.
You could actually see what was being, the beams and the, all the steel beams and prefabricated.
Probably I want to find out how many people would be available to make it worthwhile for you to do it. You know?
We had probably four committee members and then some other Brookside staff that hadn't been through. So we probably had probably 10
four
folks
staff
through.
And four.
Four and four? Okay, four, so four, 8-4.
Four. So, I think all of us work.
I sell real estate, I don't have a job.
I could
get there at 3 o'clock on most days.
We could move it back to, I mean, if 4 o'clock would be easier, or 4:30 or 5 o'clock even, there's still daylight, good daylight at that time.
Yeah. I'm pretty much okay. I mean, we can, are we picking a day now, or are we?
I agree. I would like to get
just a general idea. If it's a Thursday, a Friday, a Wednesday.
I'd like to stay away from Monday and Wednesdays if we can. Yeah.
Okay.
Thursdays work for me. Thursdays are one of the better days for me. Thursdays are usually pretty good for me as well.
Nobody
except
on
for this Thursday.
Nobody's on the finance committee on here, right? On our committee.
No.
Okay. So Thursdays. So I can throw out a Thursday. What time do you think? 5 o'clock. 4:30.
3, 4, 5. Doesn't make a difference.
5 would be great.
Oh, sure. 5 o'clock. I'll shoot for that. Okay. I'll look at next Thursday. If that.
Yeah, because we won't have daylight in 3 weeks. Well, you'll have daylight.
But, it'll start. It's shrinking pretty quick.
It's 3 minutes of day now.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 22nd seems good for me.
22nd's good for me.
22nd?
Sunset on September 30th.
What time do we say?
5 o'clock on the 22nd.
How about 4:30?
4:30?
Sure.
That's even better.
Okay.
Just check his calendar. Take about an hour, you think?
Yeah, 45 minutes.
I don't watch much television, but The Blacklist starts that night.
For everybody's information, that's pretty good. We didn't drive into the construction site.
Right.
We had to park and walk over there. So,
but that was only because the guys were still parked there and they were just leaving.
Yeah,
but I think if we have it at 4:30, we can have people park, come right
park
in there, and
there
park right at the construction site.
Yeah, it'd be a little easier.
Yep.
4:30.
It was quite a hike for us. I've got to ride back.
Okay, I'll get that notice out. Department report, everybody's knee-deep in budget development, a lot of activity in that regard. And then the only other thing that's kind of, I just want to make the committee aware, because the caterer has come and talked to us, just so the committee's aware, and I think you all are, because you probably got open meeting requests yourself. I was told that most of the county board, the caterer has made at least 6 separate requests of at least 10 or 12 staff members now. For open records for different little increments of time of any emails or any correspondence related. And so we've turned it over, the Corporation Council's handling it all, because it's kind of turned into this, okay, how much time are we going to invest in all this kind of stuff? So it's turned into kind of a consumer of a lot of valuable resources. So the Corporation Council's taking care of it and determining what's going to be the best way to respond, because there's, like I say, I think there's 6... at least 6 separate requests now for 6 different chunks of time. So just wanted to make the committee aware.
Have other county board supervisors had these?
I've had them.
Okay.
Yeah. I would assume all the committee members have had.
Actually, the time that they were talking about was before we were
right.
So you're off.
We're
off.
So yeah, we're okay.
Yeah, you're out of
list. I've had two since the beginning of the election.
They even requested my campaign, or what do you call it? My financial non-disclosure form.
That was it. I just wanted to make the committee aware of that.
As long as I was talking, are they still doing business with Kemper? Are they doing their things? Does anyone know?
I assume so. I really don't.
It's my understanding they are.
Okay.
Yeah, they had stuff. I would think they had stuff. But who would hire them? I think they're. this is crazy stuff going on. I mean, that's, I don't know how the heck you've been able to.
So, oh, as long as you're talking Kemper Center, the elevator, who's responsible for that?
So I saw, they were responsible for the repair. They've been in contact with supposedly the only company that's qualified to service that elevator, that particular one, and we're in a list, or the Kemper is on a list in queue when they get to it. So, yeah, we're not. That, I just saw a note from Jenny actually this afternoon to somebody had asked a question about that on the Kemper, I think on the Kemper board.
Is it okay to have an elevator? I mean, it just, all they do is put an out of order sign on it. It's okay, right?
That's what they've got. There's not a ton of activity that goes up. It's the observatory, which I don't even know if Carthage still uses that. I'm not even 100% sure if that's...
They're having an alumni.
Yeah, I believe they do.
Do they still use
it? Yeah,
okay.
They're having an alumni meeting, and they this guy that's, he's hauling all these tables and stuff up the stairs. And it's not easy, but Jim did something.
Yeah, I just wait. I heard that the part came in, and they're going to fix it Wednesday and Thursday. It's going to take them 2 days to fix it, because they're having some big function there, and they need to...
Oh, so somebody was able to shake some loose.
The alumni are coming in.
When is that next?
23rd, 24th is what I saw. I think it was the 23rd or 24th. So that's okay, that's good. You got better information than I
did. I just happened to be at a capital budget meeting, and they were talking about it. So.
That's good news. The bad news is the repairman's name is Gilligan.
Have you seen that elevator?
Nope, going to go back to.
I thought it was out of the mill elevator.
Would you accept
a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
So moved.
All those in favor of the adjournment?
Aye.
Thank you all for being here.